What's up, y'all? Welcome to Conversation Piece with Patrick Armstrong. I am the titular Patrick, and this is a show where we talk about the missing pieces of the conversations we're already having. Shout out to all our returning listeners, and a high five and hello to everybody joining us for the very first time. I appreciate y'all being here in 2024, the year of the nap. My guest today is a strategic thinker, equity advocate, and impact champion. She's also the president and CEO of Polished Communications, elevating her clients and partners who positively impact the community through equity and access, education, and community development. She's also the host of See Yourself In, a super dope podcast all about Indiana and the industries that we have here. It is my honor and privilege to welcome my friend Casey Harrison to the show. What's up, Casey?
I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here.
Thank you.
I haven't done this in a while, but you're a guest that I have on that I know and I have a prior relationship with, and I feel very honored because you randomly hit me up one day on Instagram, and we got coffee at like 7 in the morning at a place that doesn't exist anymore, downtown. Yeah. But we had just this incredible conversation, and I'm going to bring it up, but like the energy that you brought to this real early morning conversation was just so infectious, so incredible that I knew this was a person I'm excited to have in my life. So I appreciate you giving me some of your time today.
No, I appreciate you for letting me be here. From that first conversation on, I felt the same way about your energy. And I'm a big believer that the energy that you surround yourself with cultivates the energy you're going to show up in the world with. So I'm really excited to be here. Let's dive in.
Well, I appreciate it. All right. So for folks who may not know who you are, do you mind sharing just a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah. I never know where to start. A year ago, I could have done this really well. Today, I am a proud CEO of a company here in Indy that's really committed to storytelling and supporting our clients in reaching their shine, whatever that is. And so I love that. I love my work world. But on the same token, I'm also 9 months into being a newlywed and figuring out how to be a wife, which is fun. And I'm getting ready for my son to graduate high school and head off to college, which is a bit crazy. So life is full steam ahead right now for me, but I'm a Hoosier. I live on the north side in the suburbs, but get downtown quite often. And I've got a severe passion for equity, for arts, and for advancing everybody.
A severe passion. I like that descriptor.
Yeah. Yeah.
that's amazing. I only have ever known you to be doing the most, and I love it, but it's not just your professional work. It's like you got stuff going on in your personal life, and you are just making it all work, I feel like, from the outside looking in.
Thank you.
And I appreciate following along your journey. I've heard you talk about having tried a lot of different things while you were at IUPUI in undergrad and trying to figure out what it was that you wanted to do, and eventually communication specifically found you. Was there anything specific about communications in that work that made you go, yep, this is what I want to do?
Yes, people. So when I started college, I started pre-nursing because my son was born 15 weeks premature. And my experience with the NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit, where he was for 91 days, allowed me to build connections with these people in my hardest moments of life. And so as I started thinking about, okay, what do I want my life to look like? How do I want to be able to provide as a single mother and to be able to interact with people? I thought, well, I'll be a nurse. This will be fantastic. And then I took anatomy, and everything I thought I wanted to do about nursing, I realized that I could actually do with communications, and I wouldn't have to learn all the muscles and bones in the body.
Okay.
And so I took a communications elective, and that was how I even discovered this field of communication studies. And I was hooked pretty quickly. I really loved just the ability to better understand my surroundings and the interactions I was having through this study of rhetorical communication and theoretical communication and organizational communication. And so what started as I really like this turned out to be I really like this and I'm pretty damn good at it.
Yeah, for sure. Is there a part about communications that you learned that just struck you as like, oh, nobody's ever talked about it this way before?
Oh, everything about strategic communications at the time. Because I feel now that strategic communication is almost a buzz phrase in and of itself. And so I'm doing a lot of educating through Polished about, okay, what is strategic communications and how do I leverage, whether it's the PR or the marketing or the digital strategy or web development, how do I leverage the specific pieces within StratCom to be able to effectively achieve whatever goal it is? And so for me at the time, the ability to look at communication systems holistically was mind-blowing. I was literally the brain blow emoji. Like, this is incredible.
I love it. To that end, I feel like just hearing you now talk about communications in this way, you can really feel the passion that you have for it. And I feel like, again, since I've known you, you're someone who just like, I know who I am. I know who Casey is. Was that always the case? Did you always have this strong sense of self?
Oh, I feel like that was never the case.
Okay.
I feel like, so 9 months ago, just to recap everybody, I got married. 2 days after my honeymoon, I unexpectedly lost my job. A week after that, I unexpectedly started a company. And yesterday, I actually had my first hire start. And so couple all of that also with a son that's getting ready to navigate into the next phase of his life. I feel like everything from my name to how I introduce myself is different now. But I feel like all of these little pieces have actually created this mosaic where I can be authentically me now. Mm. I don't have to show up for anybody else or any other purpose except for myself and walking out the values that I hold near and dear, both to me as a human, but also to me as a business owner.
Sure. Do you remember the first time that you felt like I am now being my full authentic self? Was that a moment?
I think it was, but it was a moment that I don't think I appreciated enough. The first 6 weeks after I lost my job, every night my husband and I would do 5-minute status meetings because he's like, you didn't slow down, you didn't pause. How's your mental health? How's your physical health? How are you feeling? And so we would do these 5-minute status meetings. And the first thing he would say is, how was today? Right? Mm. Like, he's a fantastic human and partner, but he would say, how was your day? And I said, it was a really good day. And he paused. This was 6 weeks to the day. He paused and he said, never in our relationship, we've been together 4.5 years, have you said it has been a good day this many days in a row?
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, maybe then I'm walking into a more aligned season. This may not be a forever season. Like, sure. I think that's something that this experience has really made okay for me. I don't have to make decisions today that lock me into these commitments forever. I can ebb and flow as the seasons change.
Sure.
And so I'm really enjoying this season. I feel like this season is super aligned for me. It's super challenging for me, but I really like how I'm growing.
Well, shout out to your husband for showing up in that way and asking and checking in with you, because I feel like, especially when you're going through this change in season, especially when someone loses their job and is like, okay, I'm maybe not scrambling, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. Yeah. That can be something that doesn't always happen in a relationship. It can put strain on the relationship as opposed to maybe building it up stronger.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it was just a strengthening moment.
Oh my gosh, I have the best husband. Shout out to Mr. Harrison. But I am really lucky that I have a partner that allows me to be super honest. Mm. And I'll say, like, that value of communication transcends everything that I do. I mean, the two core values in our relationship, in our marriage, are communication and comprehension. So it's been fun to, again, that alignment piece and just seeing how everything is somehow, but yet really meaningfully related.
Yeah. It's just not strange. It's wonderful marriage of professional and personal.
Yeah.
And I can't remember where I heard this, but like they're talking about the professional is personal. Like you can't help but it be that way.
Yeah.
And I feel like you are a living embodiment of that. So let's talk about Polish a little bit more.
Yeah.
You talked about, you know, why you had to, or you ended up starting this company, you lost your job and you're just trying to figure out, okay, what do I want to do? Mm. What specifically prompted you to take this step to be like, I want to start my own company as opposed to finding somewhere else to go and work?
I appreciate so much that you think that I consciously made that decision. I feel like that makes me feel much more together than I am. So thank you for that. I think for me, it was more so, I can't go back into corporate America yet. I've got to heal. Because for me, corporate America, as a mom at 17, corporate America and work, that career and the steady paycheck, that was security. And so to have that gone overnight, it was like free flying in darkness.
Sure.
And I thought, okay, well, I know I can do communication. I know I have a specific skill. Maybe I'll consult through the end of the year and just figure out what I want to do next, give myself some space to process, whatever. It didn't happen that slow. It was much quicker than that. And I attribute that to having had the experience I had where I was working, I was very visible. It's a huge organization. And I was able to really leverage the opportunity to build relationships. And so in accidentally, you know, doing what I do best and cultivating those relationships, when I ended up deciding to, it wasn't even really a decision. When I started getting these client contracts, and there were so many of them, and I started getting out my calculator and putting things together, it just made more sense for me to stay in this space, at least through December. I said, give yourself till December. And I wrote down a number thinking, that's not a number I'm going to hit. This is going to be such a cute little fun thing. And then we're going to move on and do something a little bit more secure, right? And safe. And I haven't hit that number. I've over doubled that number.
Okay.
And so it's been an incredible just testament to, I didn't even dream about entrepreneurship. I didn't dream about business ownership. And now the thought of being able to do work that, again, is aligned to my desire to build a more equitable community and elevate the small people and the big people and the medium people and all the people in my community doing really cool things. It has been absolutely phenomenal because it's been as successful as it's been rewarding.
I absolutely love that because it is, I think there's this like duality of I am an entrepreneur or I'm not. And for people who aren't, they kind of fall into it in this way that you talked about. And it was like, okay, I wasn't really going to do this, but then it just made sense to pursue it. And like you said, you know, you started the company one day, the very next day you have your first client and you have been now working with all, like you said, the big businesses, the small businesses, the medium businesses, and focusing on how do we uplift, how do we amplify in a way that you found yourself having to do with your own company. And so what do you think, especially with your vantage point of having worked very publicly for the city and having worked in Fishers, doing things there, and having a lot of different vantage points, what do you feel like is missing from the conversation around entrepreneurship in Indianapolis specifically?
Oh my gosh, so much. And it's crazy because if you look at Forbes, like we are rated the top state for small businesses and business creation. That's incredible. But what we're not leveraging is a system to be able to enter in and successfully navigate that ecosystem. And so I think the first thing that's missing, and I hesitate to use missing because there are a lot of stakeholders working on building these access points and entry points. So this isn't to diminish the efforts that are happening because there are some happening, but I think we're missing a front door and a welcome mat. I had visibility into where to go as someone who'd worked in the entrepreneurial ecosystem. I knew that I could access free resources through the Indiana Small Business Development Corporation. I knew that I could access a bunch of resources through the Great Lakes Women's Business Council. I knew that I could access free training and credentialing through Mid-States and through the Accelerate 100 program. I knew that I could go to the chamber if I wanted to and participate in the business ownership initiative. And as a woman, I could find resources, but they have them for a variety of subsections and minority groups. And so I knew where to go to get the resources that I needed to be able to leverage my business. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
And so they fall, to your point, they fall into entrepreneurship. And then what? They have a product and they can get the product out the door, but how do they run a P&L statement? Or how do they run accounting systems or payroll? How do they figure out health insurance? I mean, there are so many pieces to that conversation that are not being holistically and cohesively put together for entrepreneurs that already don't have time to go out and find the information on their own.
Yeah. You talked about like stakeholders are obviously working and building systems to make this more accessible. Is it, to me, it sounds like almost just like you said, there's no front door, there's no welcome mat. Is it just a lack of infrastructure really and like putting it all together? Is it, I guess I talk about it as like a missing piece because it's like it's on the fringes almost, but it does exist. Is it we just need to build that framework in order to put everything together, and this is like your one-stop shop?
I think it's probably a both and. Like, sure. I think, yes, you're absolutely right. Like, we need to build the infrastructure. We need to make it a one-stop shop. But that's going to require us to do a couple things. And one, that's going to require us to collaborate across everything. Mm. Party lines, funding sources, community, like, boundaries, like, physical, geographical boundaries. And I don't know how realistic that is, how quickly. I think that's going to take some time.
Sure.
But I think it also comes down to, who does Indiana want to be? Mm. Do we want to be a place for small business creation? And if yes, do we care about if they still exist in 5 years? Because sure. building a business today is great, but if it's not sustainable or doing anything in 5 years, was it worth the investment and the resource allocation on the front end?
Right.
Whereas if we want to be a space where we are investing in talent attraction and we are becoming a place that's a mecca center for job creation and there's opportunities for all, which is what our legislators and our big institutions tell us we want to be, then we need to double down on making sure that in 5 years, in 10 years, in 15 years, that success is growing,
right.
that companies are able to access funding mechanisms that allow them to grow and scale at a pace that's sustainable. And then at every level, this is something separate maybe, but I think equally important. Startups need resources. Absolutely. Businesses 5 years old need resources.
Right.
They're just different. And so we've got to figure out what the need is at all of these benchmarks so that we can start to fill those gaps.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure even if we built the right ecosystem with the right workflow and the right collaboration, I don't know if we have the ability to properly resource those gaps right now.
Sure. And I think it's like, when I think about representation, I think about people always wanting it to be all-encompassing, exhaustive, mm-hmm. and it's almost impossible to ever achieve that because there are just so many different things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And at every event or every juncture, there's going to be something new that comes up. It's like, oh, we didn't think about this or plan for this. How do we now yeah. close this gap? And listening to you talk about this particular topic has made me think of two things. The first thing was the small businesses, the food entrepreneurs specifically that we talked to for Eat Here during All-Star Weekend. And a lot of the people that we spoke with talked about the missing culinary piece of the conversation was access to resources mm-hmm. for the small business aspect of it. It's like, we have a product, but how do we go about this creation of our business? How do we make sure that it is then sustainable and we have back-end help in order for us to do that and investment that we can tap into
yeah.
From the culinary sense? And it's also making me think about the creative economy. And want to shout out Polina and Pattern and the Creative Summit, which you very kindly invited me to and got me access into, which was awesome. So I found out about Roundtable and met up with John. But thinking about the conversations that were happening there and just the sheer enormity of the wealth and income generation that was happening in just the creative sector yeah. And how we don't necessarily always know that. And it makes me think about entrepreneurs and what it means to be an entrepreneur, because I think a lot of times it falls into this almost corporate sense of business or like even food industry, but it doesn't have to be that. Like, you doing communications. I guess I'm an entrepreneur. I'm doing podcasting, whatever yeah. that might be, media. But it's just like, there are multiple ways that you can enter into this space.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if you talk a little bit more about, like, what does it mean to identify that I want to take this step into entrepreneurship, even if I fall into it?
Yeah. I mean, I think for creatives and the creative economy conversation, and like, you're absolutely right. Shout out Polina always. We love Polina Osherov here and everything that Pattern's doing to yep. advance the state's creative economy. But I think part of the challenge is that creatives don't always see what they do as a business.
Right.
And I think that's something that is a paradigm shift, and there are stigmas associated with that. And so I think it's going to take a lot of reframing and redefining some of these words. Because really, if you think about it, a lot of, I don't want to say everything, but a lot of the miscommunications or the misunderstandings come from different definitions or different interpretations
sure.
of what someone is saying. So if we can get really granular, and that Creative Economy Summit that Pattern facilitated and hosted in partnership with the IEDC, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, That was a really important catalyst to a conversation that needs to continue.
Right.
These things are not one and done.
Exactly.
And I think people who are listening right now or walking down the street, you know, maybe not listening, but should be listening, they've got to decide how they want whatever they're doing to look and feel maybe five generations from now. I've stopped thinking one generation from now. I've started thinking five generations from now, because that'll inform what resources they need to tap into today, right? And I think back to the eat here part of the conversation and the culinary experts and leaders and entrepreneurs that they're working with. I mean, there are so many resources in Indy to support them. I would argue they don't know where the front door is.
Exactly.
Because there's funding for that here. There's opportunities. Through Startup 317, the city is helping place small pop-up businesses into vacant spaces to test their concept in a brick and mortar. And it's a very low entry, very low risk opportunity to test out your concept in the broader community. And so I do think some of these things we have, it's just how do we get them into a shared location where people actually see the front door, they see the welcome mat, and no matter what color their skin is, what their specialty is, or what their socioeconomic status is, or what their P&Ls look like, they feel welcome to walk through that door.
Mm, I love that. And I like what you said about maybe sometimes it's just this paradigm shift in language, mm-hmm. in how we talk about some of these terms, how we define them. Do you have any examples of like what we should be maybe defining differently, or what's generally been defined one way that we are now needing to think about differently?
I mean, I think everything about economy and economic impact, because to your point, bringing up in the Creative Economy Summit, we're not currently tracking because we don't have the mechanisms as a state to look at how many jobs are created and what that revenue generation looks like year over year for creative industries.
Mm-hmm.
Make that make sense.
Right.
We're sitting in a recording studio right now that's beautiful, that probably sees multiple people come in on a daily basis, hundreds of people on a monthly basis, and we're not tracking any of the things that they're putting out into the economy or how that's driving economic impact. What a missed opportunity. And that's not a criticism. That missed opportunity piece isn't a criticism, but we've got to decide as a state, what do we want to be? Who do we want to be? And what are the KPIs that we need to be measuring to make sure that we're properly investing to realize that vision of who we want to be? And I think that doesn't necessarily get to your question about definitions and miscommunication, because I think that it's miscommunication of approach and how we start approaching these conversations and figuring these things out.
Well, because we haven't built the front door yet. And people don't see that. They just walk past the building.
Yeah.
And they continue walking back and forth trying to find it. And if we just had that access point. You said earlier about our state legislators want to talk about Indiana as the place to start a small business, the place to bring your corporation or company and be headquartered here to really thrive as just our business. We talk about it that way. The numbers say that this is what we should be like, this is a place you should be doing at, but it doesn't always end up that way. And you bring up a really great question of like, what do we want to be as a state? From your perspective, what's the answer to that question?
Well, I think we want to be a place where everyone can come and realize opportunity. And I think we have a lot of the key components that we need to realize that. I mean, quality of life here is, let me say that differently, because from a health perspective, our numbers are not great. But quality of life here in terms of physical access and proximity to green spaces and parks and clean air is very high. We have fantastic healthcare systems. We have pretty good schools. I mean, depending on where you're at, there's some debate about that, but relatively high quality education. And we're affordable. Like, you can purchase homes here right out of college. You can live almost anywhere you want to live pretty quickly. It doesn't take a ton of savings to be able to create that lifestyle that you want for yourself in Indiana. But I think the challenge is that we are not investing in an identity right? Mm-hmm. And so we constantly default to this Hoosier hospitality, and no one has been able to really define. If you can define that, please let me know.
Let us know in the comments the definition for that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's been able to really define that yet. And what we found, you know, in my former role, what we found is that not only could they not define it outside of Indiana, but people beyond Indiana actually, like, they had no negative thoughts of Indiana. They had no thoughts of Indiana.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Right.
For talent attraction and job creation and innovation and inclusion. And so I don't know that I answered that question either, but I have a lot of thoughts around that one.
Well, I think that you answered it in this way of, like, when people outside of this state even think about Indiana, they don't think of anything other than maybe the Indy 500, potentially the Pacers and the Colts.
Yeah.
Like, that's about it.
Yeah.
And that whenever I tell people that, like, there are a lot of corporations that headquarter here already, it's like it seems lost on them because their minds immediately go to, like, a New York or an LA or the Bay.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if we aren't to almost a person able to define what it is that we do here when we talk to people from outside of our state. Like, we just had the All-Star game here and we had tons of people coming in. And I think it was a great opportunity for a lot of people. I saw you out doing a whole bunch of stuff, but to be able to have that conversation. Yeah. And I wonder now how that definition was being shared and disseminated amongst other people and what people walked away with. I would love to figure out what people are thinking about Indiana now after they've left All-Star, where we, I think, did a lot of really great things.
Oh, for sure. I will say, like, one of the beautiful things, so small plug to the See Yourself In podcast because you shouted it out earlier, but one of the beautiful things about being able to experience those conversations is when I'm talking to someone who's an Indy transplant and they talk about maybe prior to coming to Indy, for whatever reason, they might not have had much in their head preconceived at all about Indiana, but they get here and they automatically feel welcome. Yep. And what's been really powerful is hearing that, especially from Black women, that they were able to come here and very quickly feel like they were embraced by community. And so we're on to something, right?
Yeah.
Like, there is a secret magic sauce here, but I think we're doing the humble brag, and it's probably time we stand on business.
100%. I just had a similar conversation with someone, Filipino American, who moved here from Michigan out of college and didn't really have any ideas of what, like, to expect when they got to Indianapolis. And that's exactly, got that Hoosier hospitality, felt welcomed here. And their thoughts were like, I'll go here for a couple of years and then leave. And now they've been here for three. They're getting named for awards and they're getting named to committees and doing all this stuff. And their work now is rooted in not just community development, but how do I stay here and get other transplants to stay here? And I think it's so important to this conversation that we have around entrepreneurship in general, because I think you can succeed here from the start, but then when the pull comes to go somewhere else and do something, not that you shouldn't do that, but what are we doing, like you said, at the 5-year mark to make sure that we have the resources and investment for them to continue to stay here and grow outwardly, but from a home base of Indiana?
Yeah, because I think about it. My husband's from Nashville and we just got back from a family trip. And when we go to Nashville, we don't go to a franchise. Mm. We go to a local establishment, right? Like, I want to shop, or I want to head to the bar, or I want to go eat where it's one of one. It's a unique experience. And so that goes back to, like, one of the most effective ways to make sure that our community is and stays vibrant is investing in our entrepreneurs across all industries.
100%.
We're talking culinary, we're talking fashion and merchandising, we're talking in media and entertainment. I mean, the coolest way for Indy to continue to establish itself in its unique fabric is these small businesses. And maybe not small to medium to large, but entrepreneurial businesses that can be agile and innovative.
100%. Yeah. Businesses of all sizes. This made me think about something that previous guest Skip, a local hip hop artist, been doing a long time here in this community and in the scene, said. He said that about the music or hip hop scene specifically, there is no Naptown sound because we are so diverse. There are so many different artists that exist here. And I think about that from an entrepreneurial and business standpoint. There are so many different things happening here in the city that it is, you can find your own way if you're lucky enough and the opportunity is right and the timing is right, that the door might happen to crack open for you to be able to do that. And how much more could we achieve would that door already exist? Mm-hmm. And we could just open it for someone who's like, oh, I have this really great idea. Yeah. I want to get this started. How do I do that?
Yeah.
And we could offer that opportunity to them.
Oh, for sure. And I even think like it's not for some of our fellow community members, right? Like it's not even about the door and the mat. It's making sure that they feel welcome.
100%.
Because how many times have you walked by something, whether metaphorically or literally, walked by something that you thought wasn't for you because you didn't see anyone in there that looked or sounded or thought like you?
Right.
And so I think if we're really intentional and wanting to be this space where there's opportunity for all, then part of that is making sure that there's representation in these rooms walking through these doors. And if that means I have to take your hand and grab you and physically walk you through, then maybe that's what that means.
Sure.
Right? Like maybe part of this dream of having an ecosystem is also having some ecosystem navigators
100%.
So that we can appropriately help people when they need it.
Ecosystem navigators. I like that. That is what we need. That should be a position that we have in the city that just helps people.
I would love it.
Yeah. You'd be great at it.
Well, I appreciate that.
I think too, what this conversation gets at and what you do specifically at Polished, and one of your pillars is just about equity, mm-hmm. about making sure that we have opportunities for everyone. And it's not, you're not held back because you are X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Like you have if you have the idea, let's work, let's figure out a way to do it. How do you make sure that you're incorporating that in every aspect of what you do at Polished? I feel like it permeates so much of what you do individually. But at Polished, when you bring on a new client, how do you have that conversation with them? And how does that stand out from the rest of the conversation?
Yeah. Well, so equity it's a pillar that the company was built on. So I shared my son was 15 weeks premature. He's also legally blind. And so for me, before I knew all the things that I know now about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I knew about accessibility. And we often forget the A piece of that formula. But then my time, you know, in corporate America, I was doing a lot in the equity space. So when I started creating Polished, what was important to me was making sure that small businesses, specifically small minority businesses, were getting the communication support they needed. Because to me, especially again, going back to corporate America, those were the companies that either didn't have the time, money, or resources to actually be able to tell their story. And
right.
I'm a storyteller. So I would look for really cool stories and I would tell those. And fortunately, in my former role, I was able to broker a partnership with the Indianapolis Recorder, fourth largest Black newspaper in the country, the oldest Black newspaper in Indy. And I would write an article a month for some of our small minority businesses. Well, the Recorder was fantastic. Robert Shagag is also wonderful. Go follow Robert, give him love and sponsorship money. But he's fantastic. And he allowed me to maintain that partnership with him as a business owner. And so in the first 5 months that Polished existed, 60% of my time was pro bono to minority businesses. And for me, as a human, that was really important because one, my son could get turned away from a job interview because he's legally blind and sure. he requires more cost in the form of technology to see in the workplace. But two, my husband's also a Black man and he could get turned away. So it was important to me, if we're going to really fight systems of oppression and be effective in doing so, we have to get minority businesses paid so that they can have free will of choice.
Mm.
That's what it came down to. And so to answer your question, it was actually reverse. When I talk to clients, it comes down to equity, education, and community development. Those are the three pillars, and usually clients resonate with one over the other. But a lot of the work that I do before a client is even a client is to assess, is their commitment to equity, education, and community development, is it truly actionable? Is it measurable? And then if so, we advance to the client conversation. Because for me, for my company, that's the space that we're going to stay in for the time being.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think that one of the things I really admire about the work that you do is how you recognize your own individual privileges and you utilize said privilege in order to amplify and create equitable spaces for other people who may not share in those things. And I think that is something that in the world of capitalism and in a society that is very individualistic at its core is missing constantly, is this ability to recognize what do I have that maybe gives me the leg up and how can I flip that on its head and make sure other people can have the same access? And how do we make that happen?
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to tell you, that goes back to very intentionally. Like when I was 17 and pregnant, I remember thinking I would not be able to have a baby, go straight to college if my skin were darker. Mm-hmm. That's just the reality of the world that I grew up in, right? And hopefully that's changing. But that to me was a call to action. If that doesn't sit well with you, what are you doing about it?
Well, it shows that you've always been driven in that way, because how many 17-year-olds are having that thought? You know,
that might be true. It might be
like, I'm going to have a baby and now I'm in parent mode. Yeah. But it's just like you are even thinking about it at that time. Like this would affect me differently if I looked different.
Yeah.
So I just have a few more questions for you. And I think one of them to kind of tie this conversation together is you talk about the three pillars that you want to identify in your clients. I'm wondering how you are able to help them and then also help Polished sustainably marry community-driven, equitable work with the decision-making of a business. How do you make that generates revenue that becomes sustainable in itself? How do you sustainably marry those two things, those two ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm still learning that, to be honest. Right now, it's been very... it hasn't been easy. I wouldn't say that, but it's also been very organic. And that's been the beauty, I think, in it, is that because it's been organic and opportunities have come to Polished or to me, it's been very easy to naturally integrate those values, because those are the values and the value system that I have as a human.
Sure.
And so the people coming in already to an extent know what they're getting. I think that becomes more difficult and requires more strategy around it when I'm going out and actually recruiting new clients or clients in different states, right? And so I don't know that I know the answer to that yet, because I don't think I've been challenged by it yet. But I do recognize that there is also this global conversation happening about DEIA and diversity and what investments in that look like and if those are equitable. And so I think we're going to see a shift in language and maybe definitions from diversity to inclusion so that every minority or disenfranchised group can have representation in spaces they need it. But I don't foresee a day where equity and access to opportunities are not central to my business.
Love it. Yeah. Here for it. And it just makes me think about like just the work that you put in to lead you to this point. You obviously, you had these individual like humanistic values that you already had, but then you have done so much work to get to the point of starting a Polished and starting a company that helps other companies and other businesses do these types of things, live into these values. And I think as an entrepreneur, and somebody who's like sees you doing what you do, like you said, it's been very organic and it hasn't been easy. And if you were from the outside looking in, it looks easy because you're just you. We were talking about before we got on mic that, you know, to me, it's just like you continue to do all these things. And that's what success looks like, to be honest. Like me, it's like you continue to be successful. And that's what people see on social media. That's what people see when you put out the finished products. They don't see the literal decades of work that have went into getting to this point. And I think the fact that you're able to not only live to those values, but then infuse them into your business, know that that's going to be what you do as a business in perpetuity, and what you want to infuse into other businesses who do this work is so powerful and important. And I'm excited to be able to share that message with other people, especially the entrepreneurs in our community.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. See yourself in. We talked about it a little bit. You talked about it a little bit. Let's talk about it now. What's the show about? Like, what are you hoping to get across with it? And who have you been able to talk to?
Yeah, well, so I can't say a ton yet. I could say a little bit. But so See Yourself In is a podcast that is aimed at helping Gen Z really discover all of the opportunities right here in Indiana, specifically focusing on Indiana's advanced industries. And so I'm going to try to give you all five of them off the top of my head. This may become a looper reel, but life sciences, ag bioscience, workforce development. I knew I would fumble. Tech and...
I don't know the fifth one.
Advanced manufacturing.
Oh, yeah.
Advanced manufacturing and logistics.
I thought it was a manufacturing one. Yes.
Yes.
You got
okay.
it.
So those are the five industries in Indiana that are really driving our state forward. And what I've discovered, what I think listeners are already learning, is that there are jobs in these industries no matter what you studied.
Right.
So you may want to work in life sciences, but you don't want to be a doctor. Okay, great. They need accountants. They need finance people. They need communicators and marketers. They need strategy officers, right? And so it's helping all of the listeners start to unearth what could they want to do? And could they look for opportunities in advanced industries? And if the answer to both of the above is a variety of yes, that each episode is aiming to give some actual tactical tips or actions that they can go take right now when listening to start either building connections or meeting companies or just getting plugged in to the right ecosystems. And so right now, we're still in season one. I've had the pleasure of sitting down with Milan Ball, with Ryan Henderson. So I should maybe give context. Milan Ball is the development director at Be Nimble Foundation.
Yep.
She's also just a dear, dear friend of mine. I think Milan is one of the brightest jewels in the city. Ryan Henderson is the director of strategy and innovation, I think, with Kinexus Indiana. Ryan has a really cool story. He's actually from New Zealand. And so I loved talking to him about, because I'm like, how did you end up in Indiana? what was it about Indiana? Bailey Rayford is on a recent podcast. Bailey owns Kendall Logan Logistics, and it is an all-Black female leadership team. And again, Bailey grew up on a farm, and now she talks today about how growing up on a farm catalyzed her entrepreneurial journey, which I did not grow up on a farm, and I would have not connected those dots. And so See Yourself In has been really, really cool, and we're just getting started. There are some things in the works in the next couple of probably months, and I cannot wait to share more.
I'm super excited for that. I love the show. You're an excellent podcast host. We talked about that before we got on mic as well.
I learned from Patrick. He is the best.
Oh, I appreciate that. I don't know if I'm the best, but I'm okay.
He's up there.
But I did want to shout out Milan because I really enjoyed y'all's conversation and how she talked about like what she did to start integrating herself into the community in Indianapolis when she got here. And essentially it was just like, what are the events happening? And I'm just going to sign up and go to them.
Yeah.
And as someone who spent a lot of time here before moving to Chicago and then coming back to Chicago or coming back to Indianapolis, I never did any of that, even though I was here and from here. Mm-hmm. And I never built the community pre-2022 that would allow me to maybe be a little bit further along than where I am at currently. And I think it's so interesting because a lot of that was wrapped up in my own identity journey. And when I listen to Milan talk, it's like listening to you talk. It's just like somebody who knows themselves and who is secure in who they are and also not afraid maybe to put themselves in these situations and meet and connect and network. And I took so much away from that conversation because I'm like, okay, I have to be doing this. I have to be going to the creative mornings on Fridays. And I have to be plugging into these different networks that exist here because there are so many amazing people doing things. And the Hoosier Hospitality comes out immediately. People want to know, how can I help you?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, yes, you do need to be, there, but you need to be there too. And I think that's part of what makes Indy different is that you can walk into these rooms and leave with a whole new network of people to go learn from and grow with and gain insights from. And that's rare. You aren't going to get that in a Chicago or a New York or maybe even a Nashville at this point in time. And so I think being able to really understand the opportunity and seize the opportunity here in Indy, I mean, that's the differentiator.
100%. Yeah. I was just at an event at All-Star where people kept coming up to me and just like striking a conversation. And I was like, I literally thought that. I'm like, if I was in New York, this would not happen. Like, I would have to be that person. And then that the people I was talking to would probably be like, get away from me.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
what are you doing?
We joke, but like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I love that communal sense that we have here in the city. Casey, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here on the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for everything that you dropped. Lots of things in the show notes that'll be linked here for people to check out, especially for entrepreneurs, small business owners. Two questions. What advice do you have for the entrepreneur right now who might be listening to this episode, tapping in? They've taken a lot from here, mm-hmm. but they want to know, what do I do now? What piece of advice would you give them?
Ask for what you need. Mm. That is, I'm telling everybody that right now. Ask for what you need. Especially when you exist in places where you give a lot. I've noticed a lot recently of my art friends, they're creators, they're creative entrepreneurs, and they're artists. They're giving and giving and giving, and they're not getting what they need. Mm. And for some of them, that's even the funds to maintain their studio space. And so ask for what you need. You are giving and giving and giving to this city. We owe it to you to give back to you.
I love it.
Yeah.
Ask for what you need.
Yes.
That's the clip. And last but not least, how do we best support you? How do we best support Polished? How do we best support all the work that you're doing going forward?
Oh, tap in. I mean, we love a good follow. But no, tap in. And more so maybe than support Polished, but use Polished or use me as a mechanism to support those around you. Mm. If you know somebody doing something that's super dope and they don't have the time, talents, resources, whatever, to be able to tell that story, please let me know. I write for a variety of spaces and places in an ongoing fashion. And some of that I do just because I think it's really important to do. And there's no threshold of pain required to participate. So if you know cool stuff going on and you think that somebody needs a little bit of extra love, I know Creative Mornings does the love bombs, but yep. I do the love letters where I'll actually do like a written piece on their business. So hit me up, let me know. But then otherwise, yeah, just tap in. Check us out on social, connect with us. Let me know what you like and let me know what you don't like.
Absolutely. We'll have all of your socials linked in the show notes. And I can personally attest to tapping in with Casey. Help me get a write-up in the recorder, which was awesome.
You did most of the heavy lifting on
that. I don't
know.
You did. You did a lot of really great editing. She's a great storyteller. I like to consider myself a storyteller. Casey is one of the best that I've come across.
I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. For everybody else, make sure you check out everything that we just talked about here in the show notes. Make sure you check out See Yourself In wherever you get your podcasts. No video yet. Maybe soon.
We're looking for video soon.
100%. We'll have that link down in the show notes as well. For everybody else, you know, you can find episodes every Tuesday. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at ConversationPodPiece and check out everything else that we got going on with the show at ConversationPiecePod.com. Remember, 2024 is the year of the Nap. We're doing all things Indianapolis on Conversation Piece. And until next week, I have been the titular Patrick. This has been Conversation Piece, and we will see y'all soon.